you're listening pretty late, and we are so thrilled to welcome into studio member of the Joffrey Ballet Company is Derek Angeletti. Did I say it close enough?
Yeah,
is it,
that was good.
Come on closer to your microphone.
Okay.
You're like leaning back all chill. Just it's the middle of the day.
Just talk into it this way?
You can, well, as long as you're closer to it.
Okay.
You don't have to get too intimate with it.
Okay.
Thank you for coming in. I know that you have probably a very vigorous schedule. And like, let's say, how many hours a day are you training, whether it's dancing or keeping your strength up? You know, are you doing cardio?
Yeah. So I'm a little bit of an overachiever, I would say.
There's nothing
wrong
with that.
I'm also older in the company, and in an effort to stay relevant and in an effort to preserve your body, I tend to wake up quite early. I do CrossFit. I swim. I played water polo growing up, so I tend to stay in the pool a lot for my cross training and workouts. But as a 36-year-old ballet dancer, a lot of the kids I dance with, I call them kids because some of them are 19 and 20 years old.
Right.
But as you get older, you have to preserve your body. So I tend to do a lot of cross training. And then I go to work. Our day usually starts about 9:45. I'm there by 9:15-ish. Sometimes I need physical therapy because sometimes things get out of alignment or you need massage or something flushed out. And then I do ballet class until 11:15, and then we rehearse for the rest of the day till 6:45. We get an hour lunch break.
Oh, sure. We go nibble on something.
Play time with all the dancers in the lounge, and we have a good time.
I love that you combine, the idea of, because CrossFit is vigorous.
Yeah.
I do CrossFit, and I love that it's like recess for adults, isn't
yeah.
it?
Oh, yeah.
There's something about, I never thought, did you ever think you'd be like doing power snatches? And
no. Or learning how to do a clean.
Yeah, a power clean.
They're crazy, but yeah, I love it.
It's fun, but it is, there is that idea of doing things that are different because I'm thinking that when you rehearse, there's a lot of repetitive motion.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever get to the point where you think, okay, I've got to find a new way to do this today? Because I know that when you're doing the performances, as you are for Midsummer Night's Dream running,
yes.
I know you opened yesterday at the auditorium and run through May 6th.
Yes.
Are there things that you have to do to sort of keep yourself motivated throughout a performance?
Absolutely.
To change things?
I'm not one of those dancers that is calculated. I don't calculate my performances. I'm quite spontaneous. So how I feel in the moment is how I'll respond. When it's classical ballet, I tend to get a feel for how I feel that day. So if I'm dancing something in Nutcracker, like I do quite a few parts in the Nutcracker. I do one of the soloists in Snow. And then I do the Chinese solo in that divertissement, which is in second act. And some days I feel really playful, and some days I feel like doing it very clean cut and dry, like glass. But it depends on how I feel. And I'm known to be a flourishing dancer, meaning I will add things sometimes, gets me in trouble. But
when you say trouble, what kind of trouble? Do you get a little bit of a tisk tisk at the end of a performance?
Get a little bit of maybe that wasn't the best choice.
Because here's the thing, and I understand, right? The sort of strict fundamental, people who want to stick to the play. The way it was.
Yeah.
But, here's the thing about the audience. We don't know what you intended to do.
That's what I think, too.
Right? We don't know what
they want. When you are at your most authentic is when you are reacting, dancing as though nobody's watching. And I think people want to see that.
Right.
They don't want to see, yes, you want to see cleanliness and the technique and whatnot, but they want to see somebody playing with that art form that they have been as a discipline their entire life, honing in on that craft. They want to see you sharing that.
Right.
And I think to do that by playing on stage is quite a beautiful feeling, I would say. And the one great thing is in Midsummer Night's Dream, this version, my character in it plays through the whole thing.
Which character are you playing?
I'm Mr. Cannon.
Hello.
So
Mr. Cannon
is a guy that appears in the first act, and he's kind of new to all of what's happening. And Midsummer is a celebration of the longest day of the year that the Swedish people do. It's nothing to do with the Shakespeare version. And I think what makes it really interesting is that Alexander Ekman, the choreographer, has brought a sense of play to the movement and to how we dance and how we interact. And he always says, if you're not having fun and investigating yourself artistically throughout the whole thing, it's not going to work, because the bigger picture that he puts together, it has to have that element to it. So I think it works the best in that, because act one, I'm kind of a tourist running through the scene, seeing them dance all of these dances and take drinks at the table, and everybody gets drunk in slow motion. And then act two, the dreamer, who's the lead character, goes to sleep, and you go into his nightmare, basically.
Oh, fabulous.
And I become this demonic, crazy character that's doing acrobatics in the front, and he goes up in the air and falls off of a table way up high in slow motion. And so it becomes a totally different, almost demonic-like character, and I love it.
That sounds like you're having fun with it.
Oh, yeah.
And how much, and we, again, we were talking to Derek Angioletti.
Mm-hmm.
Am I just getting that? I
said Angioletti.
Angioletti.
Yeah, that was good.
I like the way you say it. I was going to have you say your own name. That's a, and when, you know, when people get it wrong, how often do you correct them, by the way?
I don't.
You don't?
Mm-mm.
You just accept it?
Yeah, I'm a good American.
I mean, because my mom gets mad at me that I say, she's like, it's Vasquez, not Vasquez. And I'm like, all right, fine, whatever. We are talking to Derek Angioletti from the Joffrey Ballet in Chicago. And you've been with the company since early
2000s? Yeah, 2003.
You came to Chicago from California?
California, yeah.
How much of a change was that?
Quite a change. I lived in New York for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I trained at the School of American Ballet.
But you like this better than New York, don't you, a little bit? Okay, all right, that's all right.
I love Chicago.
We shall allow your silence.
Chicago is my home. Even when I'm home in California, or when I go to New York and come back here, every time I come back to Chicago, I'm like, oh, I'm going home.
Oh,
so I really feel that way.
So when you were studying in New York, how long were you?
Seven years.
Okay, so that was a pretty big chunk of time.
And then I quit dancing completely.
What?
I went to college at UC Irvine in California, played water polo and swam NCAA, and picked dancing back up my end of my sophomore year of college.
And you were studying sociology?
Mm-hmm.
What drew you to sociology as a field?
I started in pre-med and I got to organic chemistry and said, F this, to be honest.
I don't think that you're alone on that.
Yeah, I remember the professor saying, because I wanted to take over my father's dental practice, because I thought that would be the safest way to go. I'm not going to dance. I don't want to ever think about it again. I quit based on a lot of pressure. I was really good when I was younger, and I had a lot of pressure, and I kind of, I would say, didn't want to fulfill it anymore because I felt like I wasn't doing it for myself.
Oh, really?
So I took a step away from it and said, I'll never do it again. And I thought, well, I'll do something that is safe, that I know exactly what I'm going to do. I was always good in school, and I went for pre-med and then got to organic chemistry. I remember the professor saying, this is the class that will weed anybody out that doesn't belong here. And by the first midterm, I looked around and I was like, yeah, I don't belong here.
Oh, no.
I mean, I got a C, but for me, that was like, I had never gotten a C. I was like, what's going on?
That was, oh, man.
It was tough.
Well,
I switched over to sociology because I found that to be interesting. I ended up with 2 degrees, dance sociology, and then a minor in kinesiology, because I still love knowing how the body works, and I do love the medical field.
Well, I think there's something, too, when you're a performer, when you're an artist, and having a background in sociology, kind of understanding how people mm-hmm. feel, what motivates them, also has a component that's important to what you do as a dancer.
Absolutely.
That's wonderful. And when you came to Chicago, I read that you are a Cubs fan.
Mm-hmm.
So not a Giants fan.
No. So having a father that went to dental school here.
Oh, okay. That helps.
He went to Loyola.
Go Ramblers.
On the Maywood campus when they had the dental school there. It closed in like the late 70s, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But my dad finished his dental, got his doctorate there. And so he kind of became a Cubs fan while he was here. So he raised us Cubs fans.
Really? Yeah. How was that in California? Oh, well,
sometimes kind of embarrassing. We would go to Giants games in our Cubs mm-hmm. attire and then get made fun of and get stuff thrown at us.
No!
I realize I can't swear. I swear so much. I was like,
that's okay. If you swear, we'll edit. It's
okay.
All good. Yeah. If there's a bleep, and then all the PR people from the Joffrey Ballet is like, do not. Could you please not be bleeped?
Yeah.
You're fine. Well, if you're at a baseball game, that's... Look, my son went to his second Cubs game ever. There was so much swearing around, and he kept flinching every time someone would swear. And I was like, sweetie, have you ever heard these words? And he said, yes, but never at the same time.
Oh.
Just not all at once.
Yeah.
So, I'm angry that San Francisco fans would be throwing things at a Cubs fan.
Well, pretty rough.
Yeah, it's a little bit rough. So you moved to Chicago, became a member. I mean, the Joffrey Ballet in Chicago, obviously legendary. It's what we know of as the art of ballet in Chicago.
Yeah.
What was that like, finding out that you would become part of the company?
It happened so fast. I auditioned for the company while they were in Cupertino, California on tour. And I auditioned for Mr. Arpino, who's passed away. He's one of the co-founders with Robert Joffrey of the company. And I took company class on stage, and I went to his office after, and he turned around in his chair. I had to wait. He was reading the paper, so I had to sit and wait. Turned around, and he said, "You look like a Joffrey dancer. Hire him."
Okay. All right.
That was it.
What is a Joffrey? I mean, I'm guessing
I
now.
I have no idea.
You look like a Joffrey dancer.
I would say a Joffrey dancer is unique, athletic, not the cookie cutter type body. I mean, we all have very different bodies. I'm quite short for a ballet. I'm still the shortest dancer in the company. Male dancer, I should say. There's girls that are shorter than me. But I would say a Joffrey dancer has to have a certain amount of energy and have an athleticism that I would say I'm very, USA proud. I would say it's very American.
Yeah, well, I could see that, having a very American. And you have so many interests too. How much do your interests inform you too? As it sounds like you like going out on the lake.
Yeah.
You enjoy sports, as you mentioned. You were a swimmer in college as well.
Yeah.
Yes.
And water polo. I was a goalie.
That takes a lot of strength. I mean, that's not just fun. Doggy paddling.
No.
That's some weird, like, what are they called? Egg beater kick. Yeah.
Egg beater volley. Egg beater volley. I would say that I have always been, my life as a teenager was so multifaceted. I loved school. I loved ballet. And I loved extracurricular activities. I was always involved in student government and whatnot. The weird thing was I was never involved in theater. I would go to a musical and fall asleep. I prefer to go to a football game or to go to a baseball game. I don't know how. Maybe it's because of all of my brothers and my dad and I and my mom. That's what we did.
Right.
But now I'm lightening up to it. A little bit.
A little bit? A little bit of the theatrics of it?
Singing,
well, for me, when I see a musical, I'm like, oh, they're singing again.
Yeah.
It's like it doesn't, I don't know. There are some musical, like classic musicals from the 40s and 50s.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's just one of those bigger, grander, like Guys and Dolls, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, those kinds of movies. But in the theater, I'm the same way. I'm like, oh, I could use a little talking.
Yeah.
I could use less of that. But when you're interpreting something like you are in this production of A Midsummer Night's Dream, you're also bringing a different translation. As you mentioned, some of the things that sort of veer away from what Shakespeare had. There's a lot of whimsy in that, isn't there? Especially with this production.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing that's parallel with Shakespeare is the title, which I think is interesting.
That is interesting.
Because it lures people in and then changes their entire perspective of, I mean, that saying, A Midsummer Night's Dream, is truly what is happening in that story. And I have danced the Shakespeare version. I've danced Ashton's version of it as two different roles. I learned Puck and I learned Bottom. So I have, who's the donkey in it, but I've learned those roles also. So to study that ballet at a younger age and to learn a ballet with the same title that is a completely different whimsical experience, some would say the second act isn't that whimsical because there's some heavy, dark scenes in it, I would say is a unique journey.
Yeah. But how much how much has the productions, performances, how much have they changed since you became a member in the early 2000s as compared to now?
Oh.
Sort of the attitude of the audiences.
Drastically.
Yeah.
Mr. Arpino passed away 2009, I think.
Mm-hmm.
2008. And I would say Ashley took over, and having him take over, he breathed brought fresh air to the company.
Sort of reinvigorating for everybody.
Before
sort
of we were doing a lot of the same things. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of financial problems. And Ashley has definitely, this is his 10th year, and it's quite a celebration because in 10 years, he's uplifted the company and put such a vast amount of rep. I mean, I've danced stuff that I never thought I would dance. And I've got to see the audiences grow with us. And I think that's an incredibly special feeling because you don't always feel that connected to your audience, but this particular city loves all of its inhabitants in the sense, like, we love the Cubs, we love the Sox, we love the Goodman, we love Steppenwolf, you know, we love Hubbard Street, we love Joffrey. This city supports everything that is part of Chicago. And so seeing the people that have subscribed and moved on with the Joffrey and Ashley Weider as the director, you can sense their appreciation for being educated and cultured in seeing that ballet isn't just one way.
Right.
And that it can branch out and reach many different facets. I mean, most of my friends are not dancers, and I make them go, you know, they're pretty wild straight guys that, you know, I have a blast with, and most of them go to the ballet now religiously.
Really?
And they love it.
That's transformative.
Yeah, they absolutely love it. You know, they always say, like, God, didn't you brag when you were younger and show it off? And I was like, no, it was actually a very, like, calming private thing for me that I did, like, it was all up here. Mm-hmm. And I hear a lot of the younger dancers, you know, today's younger dancers, they like to push it out there on social media. I don't do any of that.
I was going to ask you.
I just find it so...
You want it to be intimate.
Yes.
You want it to be live.
My relationship with what I give to it every day, and I don't want to cheapen it.
Well, there you go, everybody. You've got to go see. You've got to be in the audience. I think, no, because I'm sure that there, you know, I know that there's a social media presence by the Joffrey Ballet. So we get to sort of get the teases of it.
Yeah.
And you're saying be teased, but come be satisfied.
Absolutely.
By coming to the performances in the audience. That's the only way to enjoy it. By the way, for everyone's information, so that you have access to tickets, you can either call the box office, the Roosevelt University box office, by calling 312-386-8905, or you can go online at joffrey.org. That's joffrey.org. You know how to spell it. You know how to spell it, everybody. What do you hope audiences, you know, experience whenever they come to a performance of the Joffrey?
Several things. I hope they question things around them, because I think art should reflect the current situation, and I think our world is a little fractured right now. And it's kind of scary. And I think the moments that they come to the ballet, or they come see dance, I shouldn't just say ballet, because we do everything at Joffrey. I feel like they should either be able to let go and let themselves fall into whatever it is that we are doing, or find an emotional content in it. We were directed in a certain way towards the end of this piece, and it's touching. And, you know, Alexander Ekman said to us, you have to treat the very last part of it like it's, you take care of everything. And take care mean, like, a lot of steps sometimes repeat, but they're in a different tone. And he said, think of it like it's the last time you're gonna dance. That's it.
Wow.
And so you have to dance it with an amount of care, an amount of integrity and authenticity, but also the detail. We got emotional last night towards the end of it, at least I did, mm-hmm. because I thought of that day will come. A dancer doesn't last forever, and for some of us it's closer, and for some people it seems like it's a distance, but I'll be honest, it comes really fast. you blink and you're 36 years old, you know, and you're like, what happened since 21?
I know, but a lot of good things.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. So, I'd do it all over again.
Here's the thing: is that we think of these sort of timelines or milestones. You have to be doing this or have that by the time you're 25 or by the time you're 35. All bets are off now.
Yeah,
I think that, you know, we are, you know, and but I think that what you bring to audiences, you know, lives in the moment, mm-hmm. right? So that's an incredible way for you guys to approach that, to think about that, is being, you know, this is happening now, this is where I am.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it is because perhaps the next might not come. What do you, what do you think Chicago audiences, compared to where you've been before? Mm-hmm. I said that we are educated and we're there, we support everything Chicago. But are we all in when it comes to ballet?
I think it could be more.
Do you have like high schools and grade schools coming? Yeah. I know that they usually have like the field trips. Do you do any of the Q&As afterwards?
I have. For Nutcracker, we do student shows for Chicago public schools, mm-hmm. Which is really important because we get a lot of students in that wouldn't have otherwise experienced
exactly.
the Nutcracker. And the coolest thing about those performances, the Q&As are fun because they want to know, like, what's the snow like? And they have all these fascinating, questions about the dancing and the scenery. But the most interesting thing for me is children are very vocal. So when you perform for them, you hear oohs and ahs and wows. And, like, you're dancing. And, like, as an older dancer, sometimes a lot of them don't want to dance that 11 a.m. show. I'm always sad if I'm not in it, which I'm always in it because I kind of request that I like to be in it, because you dance and you hear the reaction of what an adult has learned to be quiet for. You hear it in the kids, and it's so special because that moment, you know that child, whether they come back to the ballet or not, but they, and some of them come from some of our neighborhoods in Chicago that are not always the best environment for them to get a chance to see the arts.
Right.
They would not be able to. You know, it's a desert for the arts. And you hear that and you think that child will go on thinking of that moment, whether it was that split second.
Absolutely.
But to know that that was part of what we did as the Joffrey is a nice experience.
You make an impression. You make an imprint.
Yeah.
Well, talking to you has been as enchanting as the performances with the Joffrey Ballet. So thank you so much for taking
this time.
And everyone can go see Midsummer Night's Dream today through May 6th. And you can go to joffrey.org for ticket information and show times. You can also call the box office at 312-386-8905. And if you're ever up late, come and ring our doorbell. We'd love to have you on and
hang
out and talk to the audience live. But we wish you all the very best and look forward to seeing you.
Thank you so much.
More after this on 720 WGN. That was, by the way, before I go to the break, that was Derek Angioletti. Am I saying it close? You say your own name.
Angioletti.
Angioletti.
That was good.
See how happy
you were?
No puedo hablar español también. All right, more after this on 720 WGN.